Hello and welcome to, I'm going to call it a new season of the preview show because it's Umlaut Het Nieuwsblad, and I am delighted to be joined yet again by Edward Toons of Trek Segafredo. Edward, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm still at altitude in Tenerife, about to leave tomorrow morning. So preparations done for the opening weekend. So ready to go and ready for the show.
Oh, yeah. And I did my research. So believe it or not, this is the eighth year. How many fingers? Eight. This is the eighth year of you being on the preview show.
Really?
Yeah.
So I was in the show.
Final season, top spot.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fuck. I'm already 9 years professional.
It surprised me. I think it's also 8 years old as well. I think you were on it first season.
That's so cool. Yeah.
You're very experienced.
And we still look exactly the same.
Yeah. I might need to put some nice filters on this for us to be able to get away with that. Right. Let's get to it. Velo viewer up and loaded. We are looking at the opening weekend of the season. It's Umlaut Het Nieuwsblad. There is a slight change to the route this year. Well, there's always a change to the route. There's always slight alterations. But this year, it's quite big. The Molenberg is gone, which probably is quite bad news for a lot of people. It's where the race exploded last year. The tight, narrow left-hand turn, steep hill, quick step blew it apart, and it's gone. Right. So, first of all, Edward, what do you think about no Molenberg?
Yeah, it's one of the things, you know, because I've been checking the parkour, and actually I was surprised how many changes there are this year in the parkour. Like you say, Molenberg is normally an important point, but I think now we keep the Molenberg on the left side and we go straight, and then we go to the Marlborough Street.
Oh, we're almost there. You've just jumped straight into the right bit.
Yeah, but I want to say that actually it changes maybe a bit the point of, let's say, the fight for the first spots in the bunch goes from Molenberg to the top of the Marlborough Street to position for the last time Haaghoek.
You so, have done your homework. You have. So this is the stretch of road that leads into the Marlborough Strat. It's nice of the locals to name a street after a brand of cigarettes. It's quite good. Don't see that very often anymore. So Marlborough Strat is actually relatively tough. I mean, it's not the hardest climb in the world, but it's, you know,
I think almost every rider in the bunch will know it. I think we've done it for which races? I think in the past in 3 days of Westland. I couldn't say, or Tour of Belgium or whatever. I think the most guys will know it, but the climb itself is actually not a big problem. But the thing is, on top of it, you get a turn right. And here it's quite narrow, and there, from there on it's full down, narrow, and then back up, but it stays narrow. So there's the positions are made to go to the last time Haaghoek, and it's going to be a really drag race uphill on the Marlborough Street to get a good position in that corner that's going down this narrow road that you're showing now.
Yeah,
and so then if you're on top of this road, you turn left, and I think it's 300-400 meters to the start of the Haaghoek. So it's quite a different approach.
Yeah, I would agree. This is what I noticed when I looked at the route, was I was disappointed that the Molenberg was gone. And then as soon as I saw this road, I got excited again, because it looks like a very clever addition by the organizers. Yeah, as you said, the fight to be at the top, the fight to be at the front for the top of the Marlborough Street, to turn right, to go onto this incredibly narrow road. It's a very fast descent. which then jumps straight into the climb. If you are further back, you know, this is potentially where the race can split. You mentioned it not long after we come off of this road, then we're going to hit the Hagkuk again, I think for possibly the third and final time. So it's just down here. So the peloton's going to be stretched, and then you're going to hit the Hagkuk, which is a nice long stretch of cobbles. Do you think this is where we will see the front group go away?
I think they will need to, because after that, I mean, from there on, I expect from there on that it will be different attacks. If not the first one is going, for sure they will keep going, because the climbs, they come really fast after the, I mean, you do Hagkuk, Lieberg, fast down to Berendries, then the Alvrenberg. I mean, that's the zone where I expect the race to be fully opened.
So we've got this hard kind of, I don't know, it must be about 20 kilometers, 15, 20 kilometers, the narrow road we've just mentioned, the fight to go on the Hagkuk, then we've got the Lieberg, then we've got the Berendries, which is probably, if you take out the Moor, it's the hardest climb, but it's the climb that suits the climbers the best. You know, it's the climbs that suits your Tim Vellens and riders like that, because they can really punch up this and they can make a difference. We've seen gaps before here. And then what I also like is the new road that they've put in just at the top of the Vossenhall.
Yeah. We have a lot more narrow streets after the Alvrenberg or Vossenhall, like you say.
So almost to encourage people to go and not wait for Moor, because up before the road was a bit wider in terms of between the Berendries and the Moor. So people often would just hold back a little bit, but you can see here the road is very, very narrow again. So very hard for the bunch to organize a chase.
And also you have the back of the Eikenmolen, which is not, I think it's not really categorized as a climb, but it's, it's a little kicker where in the past we just had almost all slightly down after Alvrenberg. Now you have the narrow road and then still a kick up with the Eikenmolen, and I think, like you say, it invites attackers more. From the last time Hagkuk on, in the past you had a bit of a section in between the Alvrenberg and the Moor where it was, I mean, for sure there were attacks going, but there it was a bit, it stayed quiet, you know, the situation didn't change a lot often. And now I think you can get really, with the roads in between narrow, some ups and downs, it's the race will keep going full gas from the last time Hagkuk till the top of the Bosberg, I think.
I suppose the bad news is that the wind is light, but it is a headwind at this point as we are racing down towards Gerritsbergen. It's only 8 kilometers per hour, and some of the route is kind of sheltered a little bit by trees, so hopefully it doesn't stop the front group attacking it and going away.
Like you say, I think the wind speeds are not super high to really affect it big time. Maybe if you have one guy alone in the front, it will not make it easier, but I don't think, like it is now, they don't predict that much wind, so yeah.
And it's going to be a sunny day, but a cold day. So we're talking temperatures of 6, 7, 8 degrees, kind of classic late February weather for the north of Europe.
Cycling weather.
Yeah, last year the wind was stronger. It was a headwind from the Moor all the way back to Ninov. So that made the sprint very unusual for the race to end in such a large sprint last year. I'm not sure it's going to end in a sprint this year.
It's always, I mean, you're the king of predicting, so.
Nice it's of you to recognize say, that. Thank you.
it's hard to say. For me, last year was more a surprise than other years.
I did predict Ballerini to win from a sprint last year.
But for me, a sprint is less unusual. It's more unusual in Omloop than a smaller group going. So, yeah. I don't see also with the riders racing, I don't know if there's a lot of guys who would ride for a sprint.
Yeah, Quickstep, they're not riding for a sprint, and they're usually one of the teams that kind of shape the race in terms of how they want it to finish. You guys don't want a big sprint. Jumbo-Visma, I don't think really want a big sprint either. So
I think they can do it, but I don't think, I mean, they don't have to do it, you know. It would be a risk for them to make it a sprint.
So then we've got the Gates of Hell here, just leading up to the Moor. We've talked about the Moor very many, many times. It's just bloody hard. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, the like from where you show it, from there on, it's not so long. For me, the hardest part is that you have the Vesten. And if you take it in total, it's a really long climb. This is only like the last, 400 meters or something. But like you show here, it starts actually down at the bridge.
Yes, that's just before the left turn, doesn't it? So it's
And there it starts climbing, and this is what makes it a pretty long effort. And you're already on the limit when you enter the Gates of Hell, like you just said.
What I've noticed is some riders are very, very strong at this bit. So Intermarché Wanty rider Amy de Gendt last season on this stretch, and also in the Binkback Tour or Benelux Tour, whatever it's called now, he made like a really strong run right up to the front of the group for this section here. And then he knows that he's not as good on the very, very steep section. So he gets to the front and tries to limit his losses a little bit so that when they go over the top of the climb, he's still there. So it's interesting that, you know, you maybe don't like that section, but some people seem to do better on that bit than the really steep bit.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, it's a climb in two parts, and the problem is the first part feels like you're riding in group up, but already you're riding so hard, and you know, you have to have the position in the right corner to not lose contact with the first guys. So it's some guys, they already go full gas on the first part, and then they know, maybe they even know they cannot hold this same pace on the whole climb, but at least they know, okay, I'm in the front and I can drop back a little bit. But if you're not in the front on the right corner, no way you're going to make it to the front after that. So
what was strange last year, not just that it was a sprint finish, but after the Moor, there was a really big group of riders who were still at the front of the race. Normally, this section will blow the race apart. You'll have maybe a group of 5 to 10 go away, get a good enough gap at the top of this climb, and then it's game over. Last year, I don't know if it was because people knew the headwind was coming, so they went a little bit slower. I don't know if it was because Ineos were the team at the front, and they controlled the pace, and their guys aren't the fastest. But last year seemed a very, very strange edition of the race. Totally different to previous years.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's also just the the level of the riders, maybe a bit more on, everybody was a bit on the same level, not really some guys being a lot better than other guys, which made it harder to, yeah, to break away from the bunch. But yeah, it's every year the same, you know, the first classic race, and it's always exciting to see how you're doing yourself, but also how the other guys are doing. And yeah, that's why for me it's always hard to predict. I mean, it's easier to predict when you already had some of these races done, then you can see the level of some guys, also the level for yourself. I mean, everybody did well and 100% in training, but you always still have a little bit of, I mean, it happens in the race, so you always have to wait for that moment to see how you are and how the others are.
You can see the wind here, heading up the Bosberg. It's a bit of a cross headwind. Initially, I think a couple of days ago, it was meant to be tailwind. So cross headwind, not ideal, but we'll have to see what it's like. Bosberg always seems like a climb that looks much harder than it actually is. Like, it looks okay, but like,
if you're standing at the bottom, you would say like, okay, come on, a good sprint and I'm on top. But then you start to sprint and you're only halfway. it comes at the end of the race. It comes after quite fast after the Mur. If you do it on a flat training and this is the only climb you're doing, then I mean it's a proper climb, but you can do a full sprint up this climb if you're fresh. But after a hard race, after this close to the Mur, it's a hard one.
And I would say crucially, the run after this for home, it is mainly a crosswind. It's not a headwind. So in my mind, I don't see the front group coming back unless they stop working or something happens. For me, this is going to follow a similar pattern to more kind of classic Omloop Het Nieuwsblads, not last year, where we see a strong group go away at some point. Nobody knows when, but at some point they will disappear and they probably won't be seen again.
I agree. I think in general, if you're not, I mean, the guys who are on top of the Bosberg first, I mean, often they're also just the strongest guys. So then there should be a full bunch. If there's a full bunch only half a minute behind them, okay, maybe then there's a possibility to bring something back. But normally, I mean, in a normal situation, there's not a full bunch still there together. So I agree that if you're with the first guys on top there, you have a good chance to fight for the victory.
Tactically, it's quite interesting this year. Quickstep arrive strong, but maybe not as strong as previous years. There's no Julian Alaphilippe. There's no Ballerini. Asgreen had COVID. He wasn't at his best level in Algarve.
Okay, but everybody had COVID. we also read a lot, and I have the feeling, I mean, you never know, but they already try to temper the expectations. And
you're not buying it? No?
I mean, if it's like that, then the better it is for us. But I'm not underestimating any of those guys, because even if they say that they had COVID or whatever, I mean, they are still strong riders. And I think it's never good to underestimate your opponents.
So for me, looking at Algarve, Lampaert, final stage was very, very strong on the climbs. That's a clear indication he's going to be going well. Stiba looks strong, and Andalusia, he always seems to start the season strong. So we'll see about Asgreen, but for me, those two are very strong. Jumbo-Visma obviously have got Wout van Aert. They've got our friend Tiege Benoot now, making his debut for the team.
I think they've got a full super strong team, actually. I mean, they also Tunisian, Laporte. They are guys who can win the race. I mean, and then there's, I mean, what's left is Van der Zande and Van Hooijdonk, but they are also pretty strong. So it's, I mean, obviously they have Wout and Tish, but I think they have really, for me, a guy like Laporte would always be a guy to, I mean, in the past when he was with Cofidis, he would always be a guy where you would say, like, you never know if he's there. He's always good in the start of the season. And yeah, within this team, they just have a super strong team.
I heard a little rumor that he's not riding. He's starting in Kurna. So they've made the choice that he won't.
Ah, okay.
Umloop.
He's still here. I think they also packed their bikes today.
Yeah.
So I thought he was riding, but
no, he's racing Kurna instead.
Okay.
Controversial decision.
My mistake.
But I agree, and the reason that they've signed Tiege is because they want to do to Quickstep what Quickstep do to everybody else. They want to go into races with, and I agree with Laporte,
yeah,
2, 3, 4 riders who can win the race rather than just Wout van Aert, who has to. Last season we saw Wout, who is clearly an incredible rider, have to work quite early on in races, and I think for me that's why he didn't win more of some of the bigger races where he faded at the end. So this year with Tiege and Laporte, he'll be fighting. The other team we've got to look at is Lotto Soudal, who have started the season very, very strongly. Tim Wellens, who managed to catch Nairo Quintana not long after the top of the Col d'Huez, which is, if you want a sign of good form, that for me is the sign. Tim always goes well at the start of the season.
Campenaerts taking the KOM on Col de Vat.
Yeah. So the two of them, do you think?
Yeah, I think they started the season well, and they have the good spirit there. So, like you say, I think Jumbo Lotto Quickstep, they have the strong like blocks, and then there's still other riders. I mean, but the strong teams in the width of the team, I think it are those three teams.
Then we've got you guys who forgot to buy flight tickets home.
No. We, you know, some of us, we had Corona and we're not in the best form, and don't expect too much. And
Now you're talking it down, classic. I heard Jasper Stuyven saying the same thing. We're not racing with any pressure. We're not going to win.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we have a strong team for the classics. I think we have some good, very good new riders in the team, which makes us, I mean, I think we do a step up compared to the past years in general with our riders in the classics team. And I mean, we'll have to see in the race, but I think most of us had an okay preparation. So, we'll see.
DS Cycling Mo wants to know, where is Mazzo?
Mazzo? He's not doing
opening. I know. And like, I know he's, I think he maybe caught COVID or something. He's not doing UAE Tour either. But for me,
I think he just wants to focus on the like Flanders.
Flanders and Roubaix.
Yeah.
Not bad, not a bad selection. So normally by this point, you will have had racing in your legs. You would have done a couple of races. You would have probably have crashed in Algarve, which seems to be your yearly routine.
We've enjoyed watching other guys. No, I can't say this. But like you
every
said,
year, I mean, every year there's always
every year crashes in Algarve. And I think for Jasper, it's one of the reasons, because he crashed already a couple of times quite hard in Algarve. So maybe it's a race to avoid.
I think so. But how, like, obviously you have the unknown of, you know how you've trained, you know what the numbers say, you know who's going well, but you have that little unknown of, well, I've not done it in a race yet. How does that feel?
That's for me personal. I think there's also other guys who are really confident in how they train, the way they train, and they maybe don't have a lot of doubts even before they start the first race of the season. But for me personally, I mean, I always know that I've trained as good as I can, but then still, I mean, there's so many factors playing a role. Still, for me, there's always this little doubt, like, it's the first race of the season, I hope it goes well, this and that, but yeah, you have to wait for the first race to see.
So we're saying that
for me, training is, I mean, I can feel super good on training, but then you never know what happens in a race. So I always want the feeling from racing to confirm if I'm feeling good or not.
So we both agree that Umloop will follow a similar pattern to previous years, not last year. Strong group will disappear. It will go on to fight the win. Now, on Sunday, surprise, I didn't tell you about this. Kuna, Brussels Kuna. You've not prepared because I didn't tell you. So this is a big surprise for you. So they've removed the Quarmont. Now, I understand and respect the organisers for changing the route. You know, it's been the same route for many, many years. We get the same type of race all the time. But for me, looking at the new route, I understand why almost every single team has brought a sprinter.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be a sprint, isn't it?
I expect the same. I mean, I didn't prepare, like you say, but I've had already a quick look on it. And yeah, I mean, even in the past, it was already often close to becoming a sprint or even becoming a sprint with a smaller group. So I think the chance is there that it's going to be a sprint.
I mean, they've got the Côte de Trio in it, which is a tough climb, but the peloton will be no more than, say, 30 seconds behind. The beauty of the Quarmont is that the peloton is blown to pieces. There's big, big gaps. You know, you're talking minute and a half. It takes a long time for the peloton to get back together. By that point, the front group have got a big lead, and then it's a case of peloton chasing the big group. This year, Côte de Trio will cause some gaps, but unfortunately, I think it's going to be a relatively boring race from a watching point of view, and it looks inevitable that it's going to end in a sprint. Quickstep have brought Jakobs in, Lotto Soudal have brought Caleb Ewan, and there are a number of big sprinters at the race. So I'm hoping that Saturday's race is exciting enough to make up for Sunday's race.
Yeah. I mean, you never know what's happening in a race. I mean, Kuurne has also been won by a guy staying in front alone. But like you say, with these big sprinters there, it's a bigger chance to a sprint. But in cycling, you always have possibilities.
And another nice day. Sun, 11 degrees. It's lucky the race wasn't last weekend.
Real Belgian weather, eh?
Yeah, last weekend it was 50 miles per hour winds and heavy rain. And
yeah, it was incredible. I was not home, but I heard it was good to be here in Tenerife.
I had a quick look at your program before. Obviously, it's just classics. Are you doing Paris-Nice? I can't remember.
I'm doing Strade Bianche and Torino.
Oh, first, is that your first time at Torino?
Yes.
First time at Strade Bianche.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Actually, I never did Strade, never did Torino, so Italian adventure.
That'll be cool.
Sorry?
That'll be very cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's something new, and I mean, like Strade, I mean, I don't think it's a race that fits me super good, but I mean, it's an experience, and I hope to be able to help the team as much as possible, positioning and yeah, try to go as long in the race to try and help, and then we'll see what happens. But I heard it's a super nice race, super beautiful area, so I'm looking forward to do it.
And the team will have Quinn Simmons, who went very, very well last year, unfortunately.
Really strong.
Loves gravel racing. Are you doing San Remo as well then?
San Remo, normally not. But, you know, these days with the COVID situation, there's a lot of changes always in the programs. But normally, no San Remo for me. I go, after Tirreno, I go focus on the Flemish races and Roubaix.
And since we've spoken last, you've become a father. So tail end of last season, what was it? October? Was it October?
22nd of September.
September. Dedicated the name to the wonderful land of Scotland. So how is young Scott getting on?
Yeah, he's doing well. He's not the best sleeper, but yeah. He's nice. He's laughing often. He's not crying that much, and he's growing fast. So I'm looking forward to see him again after the training camp here.
How I've spoken with a number of cyclists about this. So you obviously you're together with your partner for a long time, and you go. It's a life of the cyclist. You're away for months and months and months, and that must be hard. Just like having a partner. Now you've got a child, so leaving them for this training camp, did it feel a lot different compared to years in the past? You know, is it much harder to be away from home?
For me personally, I mean, it's different, definitely. For me personally, when I'm like doing the work, doing the trainings, I'm quite focused on what I'm doing. The hardest moment is when you're having a call or a FaceTime and you see them, and then you're like, it's a bit, I mean, I'm glad we have the possibility to have video calls and stuff like that. But sometimes you think like, it's a bit sad, you know, to see them through a little screen. But yeah. In the past, they had to go to the reception of the hotel to have a phone call, so they didn't even see them. So, yeah, it's a bit part of the life of a cyclist. And I know my girlfriend is raising our son really well. She's maybe a bit tired. You know, if you're alone as a mother, it's quite intense. So I'm happy that she's keeping up the good work at home, and that she's giving me the possibility to focus on my trainings. And of course I miss them, but I mean, it's part of the cycling life, and we always go back home on one moment. So.
And when's the flight tomorrow? What time do you fly home?
Early. I don't know by heart. I think around 11 or 11:30 or something.
Cool. Okay, well, Edward, thank you very much for your 8th year on the preview show. I hope Saturday and Sunday goes well for you and the team.
Thanks. And congratulations with your 8th year of previewing.
Or commiserations for everybody who has to watch.
Yeah.
Right. Cheers, Edward. Thank you.
Thank you.